Welcome to Cross Border Tax Talks, where we discuss the latest trends in international taxation, from tax technology to the OECD's latest developments. I'm Doug McConey, PwC's International Tax Services Global Leader. The Pillar 2 engine from PwC is a game changer for Pillar 2 modeling, provision, and compliance calculations. Built on a graph system utilizing over 20 years of international tax technology, this centralized rules engine is built by a team of Pillar 2 tax experts from around the globe. PwC's Pillar 2 engine is currently available as a service and will be licensable in July 2024. On this week's episode of Cross Border Tax Talks, we're at PwC's Tax Leadership Conference in Orlando, Florida, where I'm excited to have Dom Megna back on the podcast. Dom is a New York-based tax partner and leading PwC's U.S. tax reporting and strategy practice. Dom, welcome back to the podcast.
Doug, thanks for having me back.
Well, Dom, I'm very excited about this topic. It is getting a lot of press, and that is generative AI. But before we dive into AI, I have a question that I've been wanting to ask you for a while. I'm a University of Missouri Columbia graduate. We have a lot of different interesting partners and peoples around the firm from different universities, but you are the only person I know to have graduated from East Stroudsburg University of Pennsylvania. You also have a JD for the record from Quinnipiac University of Law School. But tell me something about ESU. Is it ESU?
It is ESU.
Okay. So tell me something that I didn't know, and I will also tell you in advance that I did Google it, and so I know that the mascot are the Warriors.
You know a lot about ESU then. I will say this. ESU is a great school in the state system of higher education of Pennsylvania. It is primarily a teaching college.
Okay.
Before finding my way to law school, I had dreams of being a history teacher.
Is that right?
I did. And I made it all the way to my student teaching experience. And I decided if I'm going to put in this amount of work, I'm going to find another career path, because teachers work extremely hard. They put in a ton of time. And I just thought to myself, this might not be the right thing for me.
I did not know that about you. And my wife is a retired educator and school teacher and worked very hard
Absolutely.
In that career.
Yeah.
And wow, that's ESU. Good to know that about you.
Yep.
All right. So let's now get into the topic at hand, Dom. And this is artificial intelligence. And I think that for a lot of us as tax practitioners, you know, AI and frankly some of this technology is not necessarily in our wheelhouse. So I thought we would start with just some general definitions, because I think there's lots of misconceptions out there on what is AI. And there's really kind of four things that I want to go through. What is AI, mm-hmm. or I think the term conversational AI, machine learning gets thrown around a lot, deep learning, and then generative AI is all the buzz now.
Yep.
So let's start with just AI or conversational AI. Can you kind of just set the table for us before we dive in and how this is relevant for tax practitioners?
Sure. And I'll start first with, I love the way that you frame that up, right? That sort of thought process around starting kind of high level around AI and then sort of coming down into machine learning and then the deep learning experience and then generative AI, which is a subset of deep learning. So if you think about AI at the most, it's really just leveraging systems or technologies to achieve like a common purpose. And that artificial intelligence is built off of obviously very complex algorithms, obviously coding, right? And it uses that underlying data and the data that continues to train it in that model to be able to produce results. And those results typically are a text image or a piece of data. Versus a result as we typically think about them in the world of tax, which is usually a calculation.
Right.
Right. And we'll get into that as we start to talk more. Then you start to move into machine learning, which is a subfield of AI, right? And this is more of where you start to apply enhanced algorithms to really automatically change, or I should say, I don't want to say change, but influence and train that underlying model, okay? Now you're going to start to move into deep learning. And this is an area I'm just at the surface level on. We have people who have been living and breathing this for 20 years since the advent of some of these technologies, right, within the firm. And it's amazing when you talk to them and they have PhDs in this field. And so when you start to get into
that's a fair caveat, because we are both lawyers and right. neither of us are technical or, you know, technicians by trade, but we've learned a lot.
Right. We have. And I've spent a lot of time in this field and obviously around the tax technology space. You know, as you start to think about deep learning, right, this is when you're really starting to develop what is called like the neural concepts that get built into the models themselves. And this is when people, I think, start to get worried about what could be coming out, right? In terms of now you have a system that can do some form of, and I know people who are listening are thinking.
Right.
Right? That thinking is obviously programmatic. It is being trained to do that thinking. We'll talk a little bit about how to manage that around responsible AI usage. Then you get into generative AI, and that's leveraging the algorithms that have been created by, and we've heard of these, they're out in the market, right? The buzz that you were talking about, those algorithms have been specifically developed by a number of organizations, right? Some public, some private, right? Around how do those models start to generate written data, generate visual data, generate auditory data. And it's more of a data output versus, again, that calculation level. But it's generating it based off of prompts. And those prompts are then, and the data that gets loaded in as on behalf of that, or with that prompt, excuse me, is what trains that model. And that model's continuing to learn. And you can see how those concepts all kind of stack upon each other to develop into what is the most deepest form, which is this generative AI concept that we're all hearing about right now.
So what are some of the practical differences between these? Because I feel like now that Gen AI has really, you know, taken over just the culture almost, there's still a lot of things that are machine learning, sure. right? Sort of the conventional AI. So talk a little bit about some of the practical differences. And I think that, you know, yeah. I think, you know, my mom believes that everything is Gen AI now, and I don't know if you've got a similar experience.
I do, and ironically enough, it's my dad who thinks everything is Gen AI right now, because that's what he's hearing. You know, he's been using AI for probably the last 15 years, and he doesn't even realize it. It's in his phone, right, when he's about to send me a text. It already knows what his typical text has been to me in the morning. So it already gives him that prompt of right. the initial three words, right, to choose from, or in a response back to me, right? It's learned how he typically responds. It's also in, you know, ironically enough, his alarm clock, which starts to identify for him, you know, what's his normal wake up time, and has prompted him on what time to set the alarm for each morning, as opposed to just being a standard alarm clock. And it's actually pretty cool in terms of how it learns that. But those are all types of that form of machine learning that's mm-hmm. been put into things already that we use every day. Right. Where this has now gotten into more of a practical realm is what we're seeing now in terms of how we're leveraging these tools and a generative AI concept around the solutions that we can perform on behalf of, as we're looking at data sets, as we're looking at, I would say, product classifications, et cetera. And we'll get into some more of that detail. But thinking through, okay, if I start to leverage these in terms of applying data into them, what are the scenarios? What are the characteristics? What are the commonalities between different data sets? That's where we're seeing the generative AI really start to perform really well.
All right. So I want to now kind of tie this into the tax practitioners,
because sure.
this is, you know, not a technology audience. It's a tax audience. And I want to be able to, like, for you to explain, why is this important for tax practitioners? And I think that this is maybe best understood in the context of what kinds of things, you know, tax practitioners could use AI mm-hmm. for. And the way I kind of, and the way I like to break this down is that, you know, there are a number of different things and sort of practical ways that folks can use AI. So a chat query,
yep.
right? We think of the typical search, mm-hmm. Document interrogation,
yep.
right? Which is, you know, using a machine to review a subset of documents or a
right.
subset of data. And then text generation. We've
yep.
seen a lot of that with ChatGPT and, you know, the students that can now have their essays and papers written for them.
Right.
And so kind of if we put those in those three categories, maybe we start with chat query.
Sure.
What are some of the examples for tax practitioners? And there's a whole bunch, right? Sure. That make this real for those of us in the industry.
Yeah, I think the easiest way to think about chat queries is really simple things, right? For example, I actually needed an iron this morning in my hotel room. Luckily enough, everything stayed pretty well. I'm on day three here. And I called up. And I didn't get a human, right? I got basically an interface, and it asked me what I was looking for. And I said, I need an iron for my room. And then it waited about 2 seconds, and it said, did you say you need an iron for your room? And I said, yes. And said, we've notified housekeeping. That's a great example of a chat query, right? It's interfacing, understanding the data that I'm providing, right? And then applying that to the model that exists underneath it. That's not a tax example,
but that's
a tax professional interfacing with AI. And we'll get into some of those examples, but that's a really good example of that chat query in real life.
And what are some of the examples from a tax perspective?
I think really easy way to think about this is, and we're seeing this start to get embedded into a lot of the tools that we work with every day as tax professionals that we use in our reporting, right, are different types of assistants. You're starting to see these come into play, and chat being both verbal as well as type chat. Mm-hmm. So think about it that way, right, where you're searching for tax return information or you're searching on behalf of a set of documents that have been loaded in, right? And we'll get into document interrogation. That's a little bit different, but those documents are all producing what are the data sets that the AI is basically looking to and pulling from. So as a tax professional, you may be trying to pull up data as it relates to, you know, the last 10 years, right? Assuming you've loaded all of that data in, right? A chat query may be, you know, give me my, you know, top 10 tax jurisdictions over the last 10 years and create a graph for it. And that graph would automatically be produced based on the chat query that's been put into the model.
Right. Yeah. And so when I think about it, tax knowledge management, as we think, and particularly you do more with the data stuff, I do a lot more with kind of the qualitative, but I think these are equally applicable, right? Sort of the tax knowledge management, standardization of documentation, mm-hmm. Particularly in the context of forms and statements, like in the tax return process. Obviously, the tax research, we see this with a number of providers that are already out there that are using, and I think that's, to your point, it's already integrated into what we're doing as we do searches within, you know, the various providers that do tax research. Obviously, advanced tax document search, that's something in our business that we're very focused on, and even tax technical, like FAQs, is something that we've been thinking a lot about.
Right, and all that kind of... All that requires the need to ingest documents to be able to teach that model. And that's where the document interrogation starts to come into play. So if you think about it from this perspective, right, you know, a model is going to sit within an organization, and that model needs to leverage the underlying data. So number one, this is a huge initiative around how do you get the right data centralized.
Right.
And for most of our listeners, right, that continues to be a challenge for us in tax. Finance functions are changing in terms of their ERP platforms. The overall data model within that organization may have changed because of acquisitions, right? And because of that, you don't have a centralized way to extract that data, nor would you have a centralized way to then interrogate the underlying documents that you need to be able to look to. So being able to kind of wall off and say, okay, I want to be able to do things like tax notice document interrogation, right? So you're going to have to compile all of your tax notices, right? Have a process for doing that, have a place where you're going to post them to. And then it's a matter of, okay, via utilizing the model itself, but also the tools that extract the actual text off of those notices, right, to then create a data model to then apply that AI against. And then you can pull out things like understanding, okay, what types of notices do we typically receive? What jurisdictions do we typically receive those notices in? Now, look, if these are things that you've typically tracked somehow and you don't receive a lot of notices, you know, keep doing that.
Right.
But for a lot of multinationals, right,
the volume is really high.
Exactly. You're able to then interrogate the underlying documents and then also understand trends as it relates to, you know, taxing jurisdictions, right? The types of penalties, or excuse me, the types of notices that you're receiving, and then be able to get a better sense of what's driving those and focus your attention there, right? This isn't just meant to be a way of understanding at a high level what data do we have, but also what are the processes that underlie this that are impacting us as an organization, and how can we better focus our attention? And we'll get into that in terms of what's some of the ROI that you can get out of this,
right?
Versus just centralizing data and saying we're using AI.
Yeah, the document interrogation, I think controversy trend analysis is a great example. Right. I think one of the other practical examples, I do a lot of M&A and deal work, is due diligence, issue spotting.
Yep.
Now, we're going to talk about this. It's not perfect, right? But we can, through the document interrogation, at least identify additional issues. But we're still going to need professionals.
Right.
Spoiler alert for a little bit later. This, we're not going to be able to, at any time in probably our careers, you know, just be able to push a button and this is where all the diligence items come out. And then to your point, the tax document classification, the data validation. Another one that I think is very interesting is just tax return review and analytics and trying to identify, are there some outliers, particularly compared to prior years? Mm-hmm. Just a lot of practical implications for tax and the document interrogation.
Yep.
And then the last one that I wanted to talk about, which is fascinating and something I've been spending quite a bit of time with the team and working with your team, is text generation.
Yep.
And the idea of like tax memos being able to be drafted, transfer pricing documentation, valuation reports. I mean, anything that is document oriented, and trying to do text generation, which has its limitations. But talk a little bit about that.
It does have its limitations. And I would say those limitations for a lot of people who are watching is, you know, at the level of being, you know, a first year associate.
Right.
Right. And when you think about that, and that's not a bad thing when you think about that level of skill,
right. For sure.
But, and I would say it's a great way to leverage generative AI as a starting point. Now what we're seeing is, okay, that based on that text generation, how do you then, you know, take the feedback that exists to then retrain the model, right? AI is moving so quickly, right? The speed at which you would typically find a human being able to learn things is a fraction of how quickly an AI model can.
Sure.
Now, do I think they're going to be drafting, you know, memorandums that we would have, you know, a seventh year manager drafting?
Right.
No, not at this point. And I don't think it's going to get to a point where it would remove any level of review that's ever going to be needed. But as you continue to develop that model and as you continue to train it, right, you're going to see improvements in it. I will say this, you know, and one of my partners who you've had on your podcast has used it a couple of times to draft some emails more recently. And it's a great starting point. It's a great way to just get started. And then you have to tailor it and tweak things and do a level of review on it. That's the most important piece here. But you can use that as a starting point to be able to then apply your analysis and then produce your deliverable.
Exactly. So no cross-border tax talks. Cross-border Tax Talks podcast would be complete without at least mentioning Pillar 2, Dom. And okay. So I've gotten a lot of questions about Gen AI for Pillar 2. And I want to really kind of break this into two subsets. The first is the front-end data collection.
Sure.
Because I think all of us have been chasing the, as Michael Lecky likes to call, the magic data grinder. I call it the magic pipe, right? Where you just plug it into a client, to a taxpayer's system, right? And all of the extraction and organization and just data pops out, kind of the front end data. And then there's the back end analysis. But start with the front end and some of the, what are the limitations, right, associated with using Gen AI, particularly for extraction, labeling, et cetera?
Yeah, I think it, you mentioned the word labeling, and I think that's a critical focus point here, right? Gen AI is not going to perform the extraction for you, right? And that extraction is probably you're better off using, right, developing a pipe, developing some form of coded software, utilizing other forms of, you know, in this realm of machine learning, right? Where you can leverage some of the other tools or downstream tools like robotics, you know, things of that nature, mm-hmm. right? ETL type tools to be able to perform that extraction. Not a good place to apply a Gen AI use case. But then you talked about labeling, and that's a great idea, right? Because once you have that data, you've had a human go through it and understand, okay, how do we map it? How do we classify it? How do we think through what are some of the data inconsistencies that we have between, you know, different platforms and what needs to then be mastered in terms of that data? Well, those are all things that a human typically has had to do. And in doing that effort, you can then take that and apply that into the model to be able to perform that for you. It's not going to automatically, you know, spit out, here are all your data classification issues, because it hasn't been taught. What are the sources? What are those classification issues or labeling issues, right? Indirect tax is a great example of this, and withholding, right? Where you actually have to go through and look at individual transactions, right? And understand that individual data set or metadata around that specific transaction, how to map it. You can then teach the model to do that for you going forward. But obviously, as you think about this, and everybody who's watching is probably thinking, well, you have to review that, right? Because
exactly.
What if it mislabels, misclassifies? And that's where other types of tools can come into play to help with that level of review on top.
Right. And then as we think about kind of what I would call the back end analysis of pillar two, mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of opportunity for Gen AI, for example. And one practical implication that I've already seen or practical use case is on disclosure statements, yep. for example. So being able to particularly, because a lot of this is public information reported in 10-Ks, and particularly for the non-US multinationals that will have to do a disclosure this year under IAS 12. You know, you can use Gen AI to effectively draft a first sure. first draft of the disclosure statement. What are other similarly situated taxpayers disclosing with respect to Pillar 2? Another practical implication that we've seen is for constituent entity analysis. Mm-hmm. We've already incorporated this into our Pillar 2 engine, that qualitative analysis, and being able to actually determine who are your popes, who are your mokes. And so that's more, again, back end, and it does require, to your point, and the labeling is key, right? And that has to be done initially by a human being
yeah,
at this point,
absolutely.
Right? Like, and so, but I think, again, this is just the tip of the iceberg, and pillar two, given how new it is, I think there's just a big interest from practitioners, taxpayers to figure out, all right, we're setting up this new system. It's this whole new global international tax system. How do we try to tech enable this as much as possible?
Yeah, it's an exciting time, right? When you think about the fact, you know, we have this a convergence of tech and a new reporting regime.
Right.
And this tech that we've been talking about has been around for a long time.
Yeah.
This is, and obviously has been bubbling up quite frequently over the last couple months. And it's the news hype cycle right now, and we're all hearing about it. But there's a convergence here, and it's really an exciting time for people like me as we sit down with clients. It comes down to understanding the issue. What are they trying to solve? But like, I love talking about this. I love how clients are just thinking about all of the different things. And a lot of times they're not going to be Gen AI areas of focus where you can solve that issue with Gen AI, but it's causing them to say, wait, this is going on. What are my issues? Could they be solved by this? And then we're uncovering other ways
right.
that they
kind
can
of
be
working
solved,
backwards right. almost from there to the
right.
machine learning, conventional AI,
yeah.
or just basic tech enablement,
right.
just
exactly.
basic coding.
Right.
All right. So we've talked about humans and the role that they play. And there's a lot of concern, particularly amongst, you know, people that are just starting in the profession, is, are our jobs going to get taken over by Gen AI? And I think you've mentioned specifically the need for checks and balances,
yep.
the need that the fact that things need to be reviewed. And like the point being is that, well, if this is a first year, you know, if this can do the work of a first year associate or a brand new hire, does that mean we don't need any more brand new hires mm-hmm. or first year associates? And
right.
the answer is, of course we do, because we're going to need people to be able to help program, right? And then we're also ultimately going to need people to review. And so the way I think about it is that people's jobs are going to change, right? It's not sure. The fact that we're going to need people. So what are some of the skills, like how will people's jobs change? What are some of the skills that people are going to need as they get into the tax industry?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's something I get asked a lot, right? I think there's obviously a lot of pressure around headcount that a lot of our clients that are watching are dealing with, and it's understandable in the sense like adding new heads is not something exactly that my organization is very open to. But understanding where these roles come into play is also very important. So there's a balance there. I think when I take a step back, I think it's in three different areas, right? Area number one is really a data analyst, right? You think about the amount of data that's needed here, the ability to get into more of understanding classifications, understanding trends, understanding, you know, the mapping characteristics and how to approach just their overall data architecture. That could be someone that lives in the tax function. It could be somebody who maybe is like a co-finance tax data person, but they have to be able to understand those tax concepts, right? That's number one. Number two, as it specifically relates to Gen AI, right? You have this need now for someone that we refer to as prompt engineers, mm-hmm. right? And it's a term probably most people have started to hear. And think about it this way, right? If I was to ask Gen AI to send me a picture of a bird, right? Or produce a picture of a bird for me, it's going to produce whatever that picture is that it first pulls up of probably that is most searched for of a bird. Now, if I ask for it to produce a picture, since we're in Florida, of a flamingo, right? It's going to
give
me a
picture. You were going to choose a cardinal.
I'm sorry. Right. I'm a Yankees fan. Right. Sorry.
I know you are.
You know, it's hard being great all the time, except not in the last 15 years.
We've got the second most World Series to the Yankees. But
it's tough being right. Number one, I'll tell you that.
just ask.
But if you ask for it to produce a picture of a flamingo, probably you're going to get a pink flamingo. Now, if I say, can you please produce a picture of a white flamingo, I'll get a... So very rudimentary right. example, but that's what a prompt engineer has to be able to think through. Now apply tax to that example, right? And you can see how the permutations, the level of knowledge of tax,
right,
as well as the level of knowledge of how to interface with the model is paramount, or else you're going to get what have been termed hallucinations.
Right. Well, I like that.
I like it too. And that's where this third categorization in terms of new staff level, or I should say new skill set, is yeah. going to be required, which is in terms of the reviewer.
Right.
And these are people that, again, have to have that baseline tax knowledge, and not saying baseline to be rudimentary, but have to have
yeah,
tax.
You got to know tax.
You have to understand tax, but you also have to understand, okay, the data architecture. You have to understand how that individual query typically is going to be constructed, because you need to understand that output and how to review it. And so you think about all three of those. That could be one person in some organizations. Those could be multiple people in organizations. Depends on the organization, depends on their approach, but you can see how those skill sets are going to be required. The first one, that data analyst, is already something that we're seeing a large majority of organizations sure. start to position people as. It needs to become more of a full-time job for a lot of organizations, or how do you rely on an external provider to act as, you know, your data analyst team on behalf of your tax function?
Yeah, I view it, Dom, as a very exciting time, particularly people getting into the profession, because, I mean, we are in such a point of change that I frankly would look at it if I was, you know, just getting into, if I was a taxpayer, or if you're a practitioner, whether a lawyer or heading into an accounting firm, that it really is an exciting time. And I think it provides for extreme amounts of opportunity for those younger folks to embrace these skill sets. So let's move now to responsible AI.
Sure.
And it's a term that we use a lot. And help me understand just what are the risks associated for organizations, including ourselves at PwC, but along with taxpayers. Talk about what are some of the risks, and what does responsible AI mean, and how do companies protect themselves from some of these risks?
Sure. I think there are... look, there are a couple of risks. I don't want to say a number of risks, because I think, like anything, this is a technology that has a huge upside. But I do think the need to be responsible in terms of how it's used is critical, right? And that's not just responsible in terms of an individual user, but also as an organization, how are you leveraging this, right? So number one, you have to think about it from a privacy perspective. And that's privacy as it relates to your individual customers or clients, right? But it's also the privacy and the privacy associated with their data, right? So if you think about how these models are structured and how you access those models, right, you can have a public model or a private model. And then there are some other ways that you can utilize these technologies, which we'll talk about. But if you're going out to a public model, right, you're posting things for that model to learn. That data that you're providing is being ingested into the public. And that model is learning that based on that. And it's using that to then produce results for other public users.
Right.
So you have to be extremely careful in terms of PII that's associated with this information. And really, if you're doing anything as an organization for your ongoing business operations, whether that's tax, finance, front office, marketing, et cetera, you shouldn't be using a public model.
Right.
I use a public model on my phone to like just kind of interact with ChatGPT and just right. say, you know, produce me a picture of a bird, right? Right? So like, but aside from that, no client information
right.
yeah, is getting loaded there. Now, think about this from a private model perspective, right? You want to contain all that information, but you also want to think through who has access to it, right? So there's privacy considerations mm-hmm. even within a private model, right? Customer data. So if you're looking to, let's say, a marketing or an employee database, right, or a wage database to pull in data, well, there's a lot of PII that exists across each one of those areas, right?
And who what is PII?
Personal identifiable information, okay. Sorry. And having access to that needs to be in a limited fashion, right? The same way that it's controlled within an organization, most people listening know they can't just log right into a payroll database within their organization or an HR database within their organization,
exactly.
right? It's the same way you have to control that model within your generative AI model within your private model space. It's also in terms of how you're leveraging it, right? And this is where you're hearing a lot going on right now in terms of, is there going to be regulation that's going to come out? What is Congress's view? Mm-hmm. We could spend a lot of time on some of our other webcasts around what Congress is doing and what they're not doing.
Right.
And then also, you know, what you're hearing from, I'll call it the sector, the technology sector around responsible AI usage, right? And that's, you know, what are we teaching our AI models? What are we giving it the leverageability to do on behalf of the individual user? And these are all things that haven't been defined yet, right?
Right.
But that I think as a world, we're all starting to question. And as this technology continues to develop, right, we as a firm have started to put forward a responsible AI framework. And we've developed this over the last 5 or 6 years now. And it's really built around how an organization needs to think about the strategy, the control, the responsible practices, and then what are the core practices that have to exist around how you think about the data, how you think about the controls framework that gets built into it, you know, who interacts with it, how they interact with it, how do you build in the right level of queries that have embedded or lack thereof of bias and have fairness in terms of the data sets that are being used. How do you develop the security parameters around it? And then finally, you know, when you think about the core practices, what do you need to continue to do to monitor it, to validate that these things are actually happening the right way, the standard that can apply? And we work with a lot of organizations around that as they start to, you know, set forth how they're going to start to leverage generative AI and where they're going to leverage it within their organization. As you can guess, each one of those functions have different ways to apply this responsible AI framework.
Right. And I'll include a link to that in the show notes on the responsible AI so people can check that out. So, you know, I think the lesson really for listeners is, you know, the tax departments need to get on the bandwagon. There are a whole number of both public and private models, but your point on the public models is, I think, something really important for people to be mindful of, particularly as they get excited about, you know, some of these public models and really being mindful of what employees and folks are doing to make sure that they protect their customer and client or whatever IP and any other types of IP. So maybe just to wrap things up is, what is the potential ROI? So, you know, I'm going to put you in the position of a VP of tax or a tax organization. What is the pitch to the CFO? Like, how do you explain? Obviously, there are efficiencies associated with making your employees more efficient. But is that, you know, what else should taxpayers be thinking about as they're looking to invest and thinking about ROI for AI? It's a lot of acronyms.
It is a lot of acronyms. I think about it this way, right? I think the ROI, you mentioned efficiency, right? And that's a predominant level of discussion that we have with clients as they start to think about how to start to leverage AI. I think it's also an ability now to also start to position around tax data, right? We talked about the convergence of AI pillar two,
right?
And pillar two right now is the big data play for every organization.
It's a catalyst.
Right, exactly. And so you have two catalyst events happening. One is as it directly impacts the organization from a pillar two perspective. And the other is how that organization is now starting to think about how to leverage generative AI. Most organizations have stood up, I'll call it like stakeholder steercos as it relates to generative AI. Tax being aligned to that, usually through the finance pillar is where we see that. But now think about how tax can position to be able to leverage generative AI for pillar two, like we were talking about.
Right.
And so you're bringing together, and this is a, you know, an awesome way for tax teams to now be able to start to say, hey, tax should be involved in this initiative, because not only are we solving or getting involved in the generative AI discussion, we also have to solve this huge reporting requirement that's coming down the pike over the next year and a half. And to do so, we need better data, better technology, better organized documents, all the things that we've been talking about that are required in order to centralize into an LLM, or a large language model, are going to be needed for pillar two. So what better catalyst than this huge taxing event that's happening, right, and this confluence with generative AI right now?
Yeah, and it's certainly a catalyst for our organization and everything that I'm doing and that we're doing,
right,
do it together.
Definitely.
So Dom, a fascinating conversation. Thank you very much. Hopefully a good introduction for listeners, and certainly a lot more to be heard on this area and a lot of developments, because this is certainly moving quickly. But thanks very much for joining.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Cross Border Tax Talks. Thank you, Dom Megna, PwC's U.S. Tax Reporting and Strategy Leader. I'm Doug McConey, PwC's International Tax Services Global Leader. Stay tuned for another exciting edition of the Cross Border Tax Talks podcast.
This podcast is brought to you by PwC, all rights reserved. PwC refers to the U.S. member firm or one of its subsidiaries or affiliates, and may sometimes refer to the PwC network. Each member firm is a separate legal entity. Please see www.pwc.com/structure for further details. This podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for consultation with professional advisors.